This is episode 3 with Dr. Carolina, a discussion with Dr. Carolina, and I'm excited. I have to admit I have been very fortunate to have some very interesting and talented guests so far, and this guest is no exception. Minister Dale Smith comes to us with a very eclectic background, both military and social activism, and so I know this is going to make for a very, very exciting episode. So episode 3 is Minister Dale Smith. And Dale, if you don't mind, tell our audience something about your origin, your beginnings, where you were raised and come to being whom you are.
Amen. But first I want to say thank you to you, Pastor Dr. Carolina, who is my pastor, and I'm just privileged to be under his tutelage. I am Dale Smith. I originate, born in the Bronx, raised in Long Island. I'm retired United States Coast Guard, 20 years United States Coast Guard.
20 years.
20 years retired United States Coast Guard. Been around the country from New York to California, Washington, D.C. for numerous years. And I really started my activism there. I used to run Black History programs in the United States Coast Guard. I always had a love for Black History due to my mother, who's a lay historian. Always had a love for that and love for God. So I started out there. Right before I retired in 1996, I had the privilege of working with Ms. Diane Harris in PAL in Staten Island. And that found out my passion for working with young people. I've been working with young people ever since. Since I retired in 98, I've worked in Hope for Youth out in Long Island, ran group homes and non-secure detentions, juvenile justice, therapeutic crisis intervention is my forte. What that means is I de-escalate young people who have violent tendencies, also work in the substance abuse field. Since my time in the Coast Guard and definitely post, I was a KSAC-T while I was with the Hope for Youth. And then I was blessed to run into a great pastor around about 2006, joined his church. God called me to come to the ministry. In 2013, I was licensed minister. And that has been my trajectory so far. And I'm just blessed to have it. So I do have an eclectic, as Pastor said, background. But I'm blessed for that because it's equipped for the times of such as now.
So, Dale, Minister Dale Smith, tell us more about this de-escalating type of technique and background that you have working with youth. I do understand that you work with Youth Build Impact in Staten Island, as well as True to Life, which is an anti-violence initiative run on Staten Island. And you actually meet with young people on a daily basis, quite frankly, and deal with them in terms of managing their emotions and behaviors, but give us more of the specifics of this de-escalating background that you have and how these techniques work.
Well, I thank you for asking that, Dr. Caroline. Well, I was first say that we have to recognize one's triggers. And a lot of times we see people angry, we don't recognize what has triggered them, what has brought this on. There's a saying, all behavior has meaning. So we first look at it from that perspective. And the bottom line, we also look from the perspective, do we want to teach or do we want to punish? So we go into working with young people, do I want to teach, I don't want to punish. And so many times we want to punish young people for their actions, but not knowing what caused that. So now if I connect their behaviors to feelings and teach them to do the same thing, they can help de-escalate themselves, self-regulation. So that's truly the goal. What I also do, we do a thing called I Escape, I Escape the Conversation. And then ask the young person their point of view, and therefore connect behaviors and feelings. And once we do that, we ask them now, assess them, and repeat back to them, do you see how your feelings have caused your actions? And many times young people say, they have an epiphany moment, they say, wow, I just caused it. So for example, I'm angry, a young person punches a hole in the wall, but it's due to something happened in his home, perhaps, the home just got domestic violence, things of that nature. So many social factors can happen. So we don't look at a young person in a vacuum, look at a young person as being bad, but look at a young person as something we can grow from.
I've heard over and over again this statement, and it seems to relate to what you're saying. Hurt people hurt people.
Absolutely.
And what you're doing is looking at the root causes the initial hurt.
Yes, sir.
In order to respond to the behavior of hurt.
Absolutely. And to that point, Dr. Carolina, you won't teach a young person how to de-escalate themselves. So imagine, if I know, we all have triggers. I tell people all the time, I tell young people, I make them laugh. I say, my trigger is rude people. So I know if I'm around rude people, I have to have a plan. I always tell people, when you hear me laughing or singing, that's my coping skill. So I had my
nephew. Very interesting. So you are aware, you're self-aware.
Yes, sir.
And so you are actually informing other people who would be close to you or around you on a regular basis of some of the behaviors that you use to cope with some of the triggers that you experience.
Yes, sir.
So that if I'm around you enough, I would know that this person's behavior or disposition is causing you some anxiety or what have you, and by seeing you deal with it by singing or whistling or doing something. Intuitive, actually.
Yes, sir. And one can understand that point with himself. He can understand it. And to that point, if I'm around young people, it's like you said, I can see their behavior changing. Mm-hmm. And I can see them getting ready to escalate. And then I can catch them before they really get to a point where I cannot catch them.
So I think, and I just want to ask, really, this coping ability is so important for our youth because they may not have developed these types of skills or abilities to deal in a larger society, but they're also good for adults.
Yes,
because
sir.
Sometimes I think we as adults, especially people of color, deal with anxiety, have learned to do that, but not necessarily are conscious that that's what we're doing. So you, I think, brings to bear this conversation, I hope, for the listeners, bring to bear a need for consciousness that,
absolutely,
in fact, what we are doing, being conscious of what we're doing to cope versus just simply coping.
Absolutely. And while we're coping those skills, you're again teaching moment and learn not to suppress the anger. We know suppressed anger brings on disease, like high blood pressure, things of that nature. And how many African Americans have high blood pressure? And I, self included, and I know it's for suppressing anger. I'm in a situation where I'm dealing with racism and can't really say act out, for lack of better words. I have to suppress it. But what I teach my anger management classes is how to deal, coping skills, how to deal with your anger, how to manage it. So you can have thought-stopping things, and one of the things I teach all the time, and I have young people repeat it, consequential thinking. So I'm thinking about the consequences before I do it. So if I punch a wall, if I punch a person, what are the consequences? And young people, they step back and realize, and they say, wow, you're right. So I've had a lot of young people come back to me and say, you know, Ms. Dale, I use your consequential thinking, and it was great, it really worked for me. And those are the kind of things that we're doing on a regular basis in Youth Build and elsewhere throughout working in Family Life Center.
So you mentioned consequential thinking. So is that really thinking ahead of time, before the action?
Yes, sir. That's
Can
exactly
you give us an example of a recent experience where you've used this or it has benefited one of the participants or someone that you've had to counsel?
One young people told me they was ready to act out, but they thought about what would happen if they punched this person. They said, as they was taught in the anger master class, if I punch this person, I could go to jail, I could lose my position in the organization, it would be a loss all the while. And we can think in those terms and think how it would be a loss and how it would affect me down the line. Now I have a chance to do something else. And we're talking about really also here positive and negative self-talk. And what that means is negative self-talk, something happens to me, I think the worst. I think, oh my God, this person is targeting me, picking on me, I have to react negatively. Positive thinking, I may give this person or action a pass. So I'm saying, you know what? This person stepped on my foot, but he really didn't mean it. And this could be a difference between someone getting in trouble, getting suspended from school, going to jail, or having a family dispute that could get out of hand. So positive and negative self-talk is things we teach anger management youth bill. And
you it's been also, great too. I love this. This is extremely informative. You also, I know, lead a ministry dealing with substance abuse.
Yes, sir.
Persons who formerly engaged in substance abuse. Could you tell us about your background in that and how
you
came to that and maybe even your own experiences?
Well, in the mid-1980s, I went to United States Coast Guard, sponsored by the Department of the Navy. We called a drug and alcohol representative, a CDAR, Command Drug and Alcohol Representative. It was a two-week course. And what it was, in my command, my last, say, 7 years in the Coast Guard, those sailors that had substance abuse problems would have to come to me, and I would help them find 12-step programs, AA, so to speak, and work with them and also give training. So that's my initial background. As I kept working with young people, my executive director at the time suggested I went go to become a CASAC. I went to train for CASAC, and that's how I expanded my knowledge in the substance abuse field and how I came on to get into anger management. Mm-hmm. That's how I became a national a certified national anger management specialist by the National Association of Anger Management. But that's how I came to anger management, do substance abuse. Mm-hmm. And I found some fields I really love. And the reason I love it, because we have so many young people that are angry, and people, and period, especially people of color in our community. Mm-hmm. But to answer the question more directly, so I started in 85, but also I did have a relative close to me that I loved dearly, and really lost his life due to alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And it touched me in such a way that I said, I want to do something, even though I could do something for him, because he was such a brilliant man. And that's what I've been doing in the community. I mean, our community is definitely dying due to substance abuse.
Do you think some parts of that has to do with persons trying to self-medicate?
Absolutely.
You know, cope, as you mentioned earlier?
Absolutely. Perfectly said, Dr. Caroline. Self-medicate due to the stresses of being a person of color in urban environments, being oppressed. Imagine being in a, you know, confinement, things of that nature, all the above. So absolutely. So that's using it as a coping skill. And I would also say that spiritually, it's relationship. I always tell people all the time, I said, your relationship with that substance more your relationship with your loved one. That is your loved one.
Interesting.
That is your loved one. In fact, I used to have a drill that I learned in my travels that I would have young people do a Dear John letter to the substance. So for example, you would say, Dear John, dear marijuana, I no longer love you. Mm-hmm. You got me in this horrible state. Mm-hmm. I hate you. I can't stand you no more. And what that person was doing was recognizing the relationship. Think about it. When you get up in the morning, you kiss your lovely wife. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm getting high, I'm picking up. I want to kiss my joint. I want to smoke. I want to snort. I want to inject. That is my love. That mm-hmm. is my mission in life.
Interesting.
But you take those strengths that a lot of times addicted people have. Addicted people will find ways to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's creativity. So use it as a strength. Use that strength module. So it's a lot of different things you can use there. But that is the key. That is a relationship, and it goes back how a relationship with God has been replaced by a relationship with substance abuse.
I've often heard just that. That an important step of overcoming abusive behavior or consistent behavior is to replace the behavior with some other type, like people who smoke,
mm-hmm.
to replace that smoking, you know, people you chew gum or mm-hmm. do something different, because it is not just a chemical, but it is also a physiological
Absolutely.
Type of connectivity here between the thinking and the behavior. Is that accurate?
It is accurate, and it's a brain disease, Dr. Caroline. We have to understand, a lot of people still think, I could dare say archaically, that it's a willpower problem. It's mm-hmm. not. If you do substance long enough, your brain is basically rewired. And anybody can challenge that, you can go to NIDA. It's a website,
mm-hmm.
Institution of Drug Abuse. And you go to their website and look how they have a whole course about how the brain has changed due to substance abuse.
You know, there's a whole new study now. And mm-hmm. I was privy to share in some documentaries where we are changing the language from mental health to brain health.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is certainly manifest through scans in the brain.
Absolutely.
And we are understanding even more how some people are predisposed to certain types of behaviors
Absolutely.
And addictions
Absolutely.
Based on some previous damage to the
Sure.
brain, a fall as a child, and things that may have gone undetected. You
Sure.
know, I have a loved one myself who experienced, you know, an accident as a child, and we didn't even know that that affected the person until later in life. So well stated. I'm telling you, this is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's another component to your very eclectic experience. You're also a martial artist.
Yes, sir.
Could you tell us about that?
I fell in love with martial arts as a young kid in the Bronx, the Boogie, watching Bruce Lee in the mid-60s.
Along with Wu-Tang and a whole lot of others.
Absolutely, a lot of people. So I started my journey. The first time I was ranked in the martial arts, I was a junior in high school, 1974. I'm dating myself, that's okay. And that's the first time I got a green belt in Harlem in Goju. And I've been loving martial arts ever since.
So Goju is?
A Japanese style martial art.
Okay.
And karate means empty hand. It comes from the island of Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a master in Taekwondo, which is Korean martial art, mm-hmm. which means to foot the hand away. And all through my mission when I joined the military was twofold, to get my degree and get my black belt.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two missions, and I accomplished both missions. But right before I retired, I was looking for a master. I met my lovely wife, Cynthia Smith, And in that interim,
there's a shout out to your lovely wife.
Absolutely. I have, absolutely. Thank you, sir. And I met my grandmaster, Grandmaster Gregory Glover. And I've been with him ever since. It's 1992. So we've been together. You can do the math. And I've been a black belt since 1995.
Wonderful.
So this year will be 25 years of my master service correctly.
Wow.
And now for the pandemic, we're going to have a celebration. But we're going to celebrate later on. But the bottom line, what martial arts teach you more is a spiritual journey. I teach people all the time. It's about your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Your body will follow if your mind is correct. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely preparing your mind. And even for combat, if your mind is not right, you can't fight no matter how many skills you may have.
Mm-hmm.
But also you can avoid. Avoidance is a key. So many different lessons you can learn in martial arts. And it's also a spiritual connection of being righteous and focused. And that helped me lead me back to, I would not be a minister without that.
Mm-hmm.
So all the above. So it was connection. It was God's will.
So all of these wonderful transitions, I would say, in your life that have, like step by step, brought you to this point of being minister. Because, you know, everywhere I see you, people always refer to you and recognize you as minister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, I think, significant. There are a lot of people who serve in ministry, but aren't always recognized as that. I think that's important. You're who you are, mm-hmm. wherever you are.
Yes, sir.
Could you tell us more about your philosophy, if you will, of ministry, who Dale Smith is as Minister Smith and as all of these other components? Because you certainly don't wear one hat. You wear multiple hats. You're a family man as well, of course,
yes,
and you have children.
Yes, sir.
But can you give us like a philosophy? I sort of like to ask this question. It's becoming a pattern of this, of what I do at the end, is sort of ask the philosophy of the person. So if there's something that you want to share with us that sums up who you are, Minister Dale Smith.
My favorite scripture in the Bible is John 8:12. My favorite book in the Bible is John. But 8:12 talks about Jesus is saying, I'm the light of the world. When he's saying, I am, he's letting the world know, I am God. So therefore, if I'm a disciple of Jesus Christ, that light of him should shine in me. When people see me, I'm an ambassador. I'm the hands and feet of Jesus Christ, of God. Therefore, people should see that in me. If they do not see that in me, then I have failed. And I'm not who I say I am. I do duplicate Dr. Karinga, Melinda Karinga, the creative Kwanzaa, says at the end of the day, you got to do self-inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Am I am who I say I am beginning of the day? Now, some days we all fail.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning of the day, I want people to say, you know what? If nothing else, the guy was all right. He's a decent guy. He's a decent person.
So the essence of what you're saying is that, in general, you need to reflect who it is you say you are,
yes,
even
sir.
Though we all come short from time to
yes,
time.
Sir.
Let it be let that be the exception and not the rule.
Yes, sir.
Generally speaking, who you are is what you do.
Yes, and I've got come to that point. I've gotten compliments. I think I shared one time in a sermon. Starbucks is one of my favorite places. I got Starbucks in front of me right now, but Starbucks I go to frequently, and somehow I mentioned about being a minister, and the person behind it said, I thought you was a minister.
Mm.
So, you know, that, and it's not being braggadocious, but the person could believe it.
Right.
Not vice versa, like, you're a minister?
Yeah.
People said, I knew you was a minister. People said, I knew something about you was different, and that peculiar, being that peculiar person, as part of the royal priesthood, who we should be, and it reflects. And I've always been a person, you know, if you say you're going, if you are who you say you are, be who you are, or don't do it, you know.
Wonderful.
don't do it. And that comes from my family, that comes from, as you said, my travels. If I say I'm going to do it, you know, do it. You should pray, God should seep through you. And it's such a wonderful thing. And in times like this, in all times, that we can say that, you know, God seeps through us. And not, again, as for bragging, but to do his will. And, you know, one of my favorite scriptures, delight yourself in the Lord, he will give desires to your heart, only because his desires and your desires are intertwined. They're the same thing. So we're doing God's will because that's my will.
What a pleasant interview this has been. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
It's
Thank
my
you
honor.
For sharing with us such in-depth and meaningful information about you and your mission in life.
Yes, sir.
And your philosophy. Thank you. Thank you. This has been another, I think, phenomenal and fascinating interview with Dr. Karolina. Stay tuned. I hope to interview you soon. Well, hello. This is Dr. Karolina again for another episode of Talking with Dr. Karolina. I've had so many wonderful guests already in this podcast series, and today is no exception. We are fortunate to have with us Dae-Young Kim, who is certified public accountant. I'm telling you, he's a phenomenal, not only businessman, but person. And we're going to just get started. We're going to jump right in. Welcome, Dae-Young.
Thanks for having me today, Dr. Carolina.
I am so glad you're with us. Dae-Young, would you please just tell our listeners something about yourself and how you came to America and how you become such the professional that you are?
Oh, yes. I came to the America in 1999 as an international student. After I getting the MBA from the St. John's University, I live in the New York for 20 years, and I became the U.S. citizen many, many years ago. And I'm very thankful for the America to give me another fantastic chance to live as a citizen in here.
Dae-Young, you not only are a phenomenal citizen, you contribute in a meaningful way. Some of the things that you do as a CPA in the New York metropolitan area would include what? Tell us some of the basic things that you do as a professional.
Yes. Usually I do for the tax advice for the small business. For example, like this kind of a pandemic situation, many small businesses has the financial difficulties. Mm-hmm. And federal government, they offering small business for some opportunity, but many business owners, they don't know how to seek the opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy to help them without any fee or charge. As an accountant, I have a very thankful to have time to dedicate my ability to help our community.
And Dae-Young, tell me, how have you been affected personally? You are of Asian descent, and you know, needless to say, this pandemic initially on a national level was called the Chinese flu, which you know disproportionately affected some of our Asian family members. So tell us, what is your feeling about that, and have you been affected in any way with regard to that? It's important to for our listeners and for people to understand.
Anyway, is the pandemic called as a Chinese virus? Yes, maybe there's some kind of the basic ground. Maybe Wuhan is the first place to spread the virus, and Chinese government, they don't do the proper job to prevent this kind of the virus spread all over the world. But I don't think what is the important thing is we as all together, as all people, regardless of the color or the race or sex, we have to deal with this pandemic, not blame and not point the finger to each other. This is your blame or my blame or others' blame. That is the wrong. What we have to do is we have to find out a solution like a vaccine or any other effective way we get rid of this virus in our all over the country. And right now, why this some people they just avoid this hard situation, blame to other race or any other activities like you know the police things or whatever. Many things happen right now. I'm living in here in 20 years as a U.S. citizen, but I never expecting any curfew in the top of the world country. I never heard about the curfew in my mother country in Korea. Korea is not as advanced as the U.S., but we don't have a curfew. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised, you know, I experienced the, you know, there are the 9/11 terrorism, many financial crises, but this kind of the curfew and police matter, I never expecting in the top of the world country happen right now in here in New York City.
Would you say that the curfew, because I think the perspective of the curfew was Initially, it was a stay-at-home with regard to the virus, but then the curfew occurred once the protests started. So what is your take about the curfew in light of protests, peaceful protests, and or the protests that weren't so peaceful?
Yes. For the pandemic, the lockdown, of course, I agree. Mm-hmm. That's for everyone's safety.
Very good.
Yeah. But for the to prevent the demonstration, peaceful, it was the peaceful demonstration. We have the right, we have the speech of the right. Mm-hmm. And why they limit our constitutional right using the curfew? Curfew is the way just to prevent our peaceful demonstration. And the thing happened was wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not a black, mm-hmm. I'm Asian, but the thing happened to the Asian anytime. It happened to me or happened to my children. It happened to the white. So just forget the race, color, sex, whatever. It can be happen anyone. Even it happened to Mr. President's children too. So I don't think this kind of the, you know, remedy impose the curfew is not the right things.
Mm-hmm. So wonderful points. Thank you. I very meaningful and insightful points, by the way. I think it was Dr. King who said injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere, and intolerance the same. Tell me some of the challenges you face as an immigrant coming into this country. I think it's important that our struggles as well as our accomplishments are heard. And sometimes, as Americans, we don't always appreciate the struggles that people go through in order to get to where they are. You know, I've heard it said, at least the acronym is that, you know, you can see my shine, but you don't know, you know, what I had to do to get there. You know, all of the dusting, if you will, that it took to get shiny. So tell us about some of your struggles, some of the persevering realities of you achieving what you have.
There's one good example. There are many things happen in the subway system. Mm-hmm. Asian girl beaten by someone else because she did not wearing the mask. Mm-hmm. Another case, another girl was beaten by someone and another someone because she wear the mask. Mm-hmm. So, you know, wearing the mask, not wearing the mask, they keep blaming the Asian for the cause of the spread of this pandemic. It's same, because they are, you know what? Because they don't see as the immigrant as the object way. They just see us as a subject way. Mm. They showing us, you know, you are the problem maker. But as an immigrant, because anyway, United States is funded by immigration.
Well said.
Yeah, it was owned by Aborigine, American Indians, mm-hmm. white, black, Asia, Spanish, we are all immigrants. Mm-hmm. And
so let me just add one thing, because I know I have some very intelligent listeners. Mm-hmm. With the exception of the African American, all groups, with the exception of the Native American, decided to come here. They're immigrants. Mm-hmm. Of course, African Americans had no choice in that matter. They weren't on a cruise line coming here, right? But go right ahead, finish your...
Oh, yes. Anyway, the country is built by all immigrants' effort.
Wonderful.
Especially for me, for example, I work like 70, 80 hours per week.
Yes.
I don't care about the overtime. I don't care about the Saturday, Sunday, any holiday. If I can make money to support my family, mm-hmm. I have to do it. That way, our immigrants have a better life.
Wonderful.
I don't get any laro. I don't get any free money from the government. Mm-hmm. It was from all of my effort. So all society should acknowledge all of the immigrants, the effort.
Wonderful.
Also, we pay for the tax. We support the money, even the all government election, all firemen, policemen, military, they received their salary from our tax payment. So as a taxpayer, we have a right to getting the respect from them. So please don't disregard any of us. We are the all same people and same U.S. citizen.
Wonderfully, wonderfully said, wonderfully articulated, Dae-young. Dae-young, I noticed that you often, your name is Dae-young Kim, but you also use a name that I think is easier for Americans to pronounce, and that is Brandon. Would you speak to that? I think many Asian Americans have that additional chore of having to create an American pseudonym or American name for Americans. Talk to me about that.
Usually, there's also one of the discrimination is showing that. Many people, even my original name is Dae-young, Dae-young, even they don't try to pronounce my name at all. Oh, your name is not English. Your name is foreign English, so I cannot pronounce your name. So I heard that kind of the complaint many, many years. That's why I don't have any other option to create my own English name. It's so sad because my name is coming from my parents. My parents give me the lovely name, but I cannot use my lovely name in here. So please, even I know it's very hard to pronunciation my name, but please call me my name, please.
Wonderful, wonderful. Your name has a lot to do with your identity. And because America often touts that it is a melting pot, I often say it is more of a salad bowl. I taught world history for a number of years at Camden County College in New Jersey. And the salad bowl concept suggests that instead of us just blending together some big yucky gray color, we are salad and we are individuals, but yet we are all still in the bowl together. And what helps, I think, to your point, is that when we learn to respect each other, we learn to respect each other's name. One of the first things that African Americans, that they stripped us of were our names, you know? And so that's a way of stripping you of a sense of pride and your own dignity. Well said, Dae-young. Dae-young, you are an accomplished, well sought after accountant, a CPA with a whole lot of credentials behind your name. I know this myself, both professionally and personally. Tell us, what is the most, the best thing about your profession as an accountant? Tell us something about that.
Oh, I'm seeking my professional designation because education is the only way to getting the better life in this country. So after getting my professional designation, what I'm most proud of is the compliment from my children. My children, when they were young, they don't know what father did. But right now, I'm using my email address at the end of the CPA. So my kids, they try to find out what is a CPA mean from the Google search. And they found out, oh, my father is a professional. That part is, they make me most happily things in my whole life.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful. And Dae-young, this has been such a tremendously rewarding interview for me. Share with us anything else that you would like our listeners to know about you, Dae-young, and maybe even about your family. You have some children and things like that.
Yes. As a U.S. citizen, it doesn't matter, Asian, Black, Spanish, or whatever. I'm the same as you. We are all friends. So please don't look at us as a different way. We are the same person in the America as the same citizen, and I'm one of your friends. Whenever you need any help, let me know, and all of Asian gonna be support all of you.
And tell us the name of your company. Search you.
You can search me from the Google search. It's a Firmus Group, FIRMUS, Firmus Group.
wonderful. Dae Young, again, thank you so much for consenting to have your story told. And listen, this is Dr. Carolina. Your story is important. Please stay tuned. I will be calling, looking for, and hoping to get you to tell your story as well. Have a wonderful day.